Rob, you like marshmallows, right?
Yeah, I like them all right.
And everybody likes marshmallows, more or less. And if someone, Rob, were to offer you a marshmallow and said you could eat it right away if you wanted to, or you could choose to wait a while and get two marshmallows, which would you choose?
Marshmallows, I can wait a while. And I've done a pretty good job at putting off the Halloween candy this year, too.
Uh-huh. Well, you may recognize this as the now famous marshmallow test from the 60s, which measured self-control and willpower in children. And by the way, if you haven't seen the test, you can check out the video on the Central Time Facebook page.
What made that test so iconic was that it seemed down the road to be a predictor of success later in life. Psychologist Walter Michel, who conducted the test, tracked the children in his studies into adulthood and found that those who had waited for that second marshmallow were generally healthier, scored higher on SAT tests, and coped better with stress.
Walter Michel is with us now. He's a psychologist specializing in personality theory and social psychology. He's also a professor at Columbia University and the author of a new book called The Marshmallow Test, Mastering Self-Control. Walter, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. It's very nice to talk with you.
Could you explain briefly how this marshmallow test worked?
Well, it's simplicity itself. The children are given actually a choice, not just between marshmallows, one or two now or two later, but between all kinds of goodies, because all kids don't like marshmallows. Some prefer Oreo cookies, and some prefer mints or graham crackers, so we have a whole wide variety of goodies that they can choose from. When the child has chosen, I really want that, we also ask, well, do you want one or do you want two? And virtually all children say they'd rather have the two. And then the question becomes, okay, you can have this one, Oreo cookie, for example, right away, or these two, also left in front of the child. When I come back, I have to go out of the room for a while. Then the child can ring a bell any time, bring me right back into the room, or just begin to eat the one marshmallow or the one Oreo cookie or the one whatever they've chosen, and then they don't get the two. That's it. And we measure how many seconds they wait. And what we discover from it, of course, is not simply that this the seconds of delay time that they choose to wait links to a variety of interesting things in the course of their life stories. But much more importantly, we learn from what they do while they're waiting some very important things about the mental mechanisms, and now more recently, in our more recent work, the brain mechanisms that make it possible for children and for adults to exert self-control and self-discipline and to take the future into account and to wait successfully for delayed outcomes or to work successfully for delayed outcomes. And the important part of the work really is that we've learned to understand what they're doing that makes this possible. And what it involves is something called executive function or executive control, which is done in the prefrontal cortex. And it involves keeping a delayed goal in mind. I'm waiting for the two cookies. It involves, secondly, inhibiting responses that interfere with that. I'm not going to think how chewy and crunchy and sweet they are. And I'm not going to touch them or get them near my mouth. And the third thing it involves is the use of imagination and attention regulation to make what would otherwise be an unbearably frustrating and boring delay time more fun. And then what we learn when we watch what they do is that they transform the situation by distracting themselves, by looking away, turning around in their chairs so that they don't see the goodies, and by beginning to explore their nasal canals and their ear canals and toying with what they find there and singing little songs, oh, this is my home in Redwood City, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, one big question this raises for me is self-control fixed from one person to the next? That is one kid possessing self-control and they're going to be like that forever, another kid built in less self-control, and there's no changing?
One of the most important things we learned is that there's a great deal of changing and that self-control is quite easily learned and quite easily manageable, particularly early in life, by learning the cognitive skills that make it possible. And those cognitive skills involve exactly the kinds of distraction techniques or the ways of transforming the situation to make something that is very difficult and very effortful actually very easy and very possible.
And part of the reason that this has been such an iconic test over the years is that you check back in with the success of these kids later and they had better outcomes later on. So it seems as though there is something about willpower that correlates with success later in life.
Yeah, there's something about executive control or executive function that correlates with success later in life, because kids who are able to wait or work for two cookies or two marshmallows later are also going to be much better prepared to learn in school. They're going to be much better prepared to deal with negative emotions like their own temper, their own angry feelings, and so on, to regulate their emotions. So, yes, the cognitive skills that make it possible to wait for two cookies are fundamentally the same as the cognitive skills that make it possible to succeed in school, to succeed in social relationships, and to do well in the pursuit of one's goals over the life course.
Well, Walter, I wonder if you can help us put this into practice with a very timely test. Say I've got a big bowl of Halloween candy sitting on my front table while trick-or-treaters are coming, and I really don't want to eat very much of that candy. And I know it's there. What kind of tricks and tactics can I use to harness my self-control and not be sick by the end of Halloween night?
Well, I mean, the first thing you might want to do is get them out of your sight. Cover them up with something and put them on a high shelf where they're hard to reach and put them out of your mind.
This isn't just about food, though, right? This isn't just ways that we can, you know, not eat the unhealthy food. This is kind of a metaphor for everything in life that's worth waiting for, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the marshmallows that are the temptations for adults are not the same as the marshmallows that are in temptations for 4 and 5 year olds. But we all face both external temptations, and we also face our own emotions that are troubling for us and that we have difficulty regulating and controlling, so that when we express them, we want to try to express them in a constructive rather than in a destructive way. So again, this executive function or executive control is the fundamental mechanism that's very important to learn and as early in life as possible. And as I say, the good news is that this is not genetically predetermined. There are huge individual differences starting early in life in how easy this is for different people. But no matter how hard or easy it is, self-control can be enhanced and learned by relatively simple techniques that include various ways of planning, of making specific strategies for avoiding the chocolate mousse that you've chosen not to have. And yet when the waiter flashes it in front of me, at least, unless I have a very specific plan to order the fruit salad instead, my good resolution, my good intention dissolves the moment the thing gets near me.
Briefly before the news, can we exhaust our self-control? Is it finite for a limited period of time?
Well, it's like everything else. It's fatiguing to exert self-control. And we have different standards that we develop in terms of how much we want to exert before it's time to eat the cookies or eat the marshmallows or have the cocktail. So there are differences in the ease with which we can continue to exert reasonable self-control, or the points at which we're ready to say it's time to ring the bell, time to eat the cookies.
Well, we're talking right now about the results of the 60s marshmallow tests and what they can teach us about building grit and building self-control. We have found, our researchers found, that later in life, people who have more self-control have better outcomes. And we're talking about strategies to optimize that and build a greater reservoirs of self-control.
Psychologist Walter Michel stays with us after the news, and we'd love to hear from you as well. How important is delayed gratification, do you think, for success in life? How do you cultivate willpower, and where does it fall down for you? What is it that overcomes your powers of self-control. How do you try to teach these traits to kids? Have you tried this? Do you have an example in your life where you used your willpower, your self-control to make a change? Quitting smoking, maybe, or staying focused on your studies or on the job for that matter. You can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post to share your thoughts over at the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the marshmallow test and the importance of self-control and willpower in our lives.
And you can join our conversation. Do you believe willpower can be learned, can be cultivated? And what strategies do you use to cultivate greater self-control? How do you teach these traits to your kids? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us a tweet at Central Time WPR.
Walter Michel stays with us. He's the psychologist who conducted the original marshmallow tests in the late 60s, followed up with them when the subjects were adults. His new book, by the way, is called The Marshmallow Test, Mastering Self-Control. And we'll go right to a caller. We've got Jennifer on the line in La Crosse. Jennifer, hi.
Hi.
Oh, what did you want to bring up, Jennifer?
Well, I was just listening to your program, and it reminded me of when I quit smoking back in 1997. What I actually did was when I would get stressed or worried or bothered or whatever, I would, instead of picking up the cigarette, I would actually go for a walk. I would take the dog outside, or I would maybe run around the block or start doing jumping jacks, and that helped me. That really helped me with getting over the cravings. And I'm just saying that, you know, distraction is huge in my opinion. So that's all I wanted to say.
Jennifer, thank you so much for that call. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Walter, that sounds like it fits right in with what you were talking about how to avoid that temptation earlier.
Absolutely. What Jennifer is doing is an adult version of what the kids are doing when they deliberately self-distracted themselves every time they were tempted to start eating the marshmallow. And she gave some wonderful examples of how to do it. And it sounds to me very, very similar to what the children do when they're 4 and 5 years old who manage to wait. They distract themselves and they create all kinds of imaginative things like singing songs and exploring their toes and playing piano on their toes as if they were piano keys and so on. Jennifer gave wonderful examples.
And so the one thing not to do, though, as I understand it, is to concentrate on actively resisting the cigarette.
Or to either concentrate on actively resisting it, because what you're likely to do is focus on how tempting it would be to puff on it and have it come through your nostrils and into your head. So by putting any attention on it, you're likely to focus on its hot, tempting features, not on its long-term consequences. If you want to focus on the cigarette, think about the long-term effects and imagine what your lungs will look like 20 years down the line. Imagine it vividly as the x-ray is being shown to you and you're told that you've got metastasized lung cancer.
Now, I want to get back to our callers, but a question on this. So the marshmallow experiment, the smoking example, in a way, those are both examples of won't power, where you're delaying gratification. What about if you actually want to use your willpower to do something actively that you need to do? Does it work the same way?
Well, if you in that case, what you really need is an intense goal and a plan for how to reach it. So the cognitive skills that are needed to reach a delayed goal are exactly the ones we were talking about before, namely the skills that enable executive function, keeping the goal in mind, inhibiting any responses that interfere with it, like going off task, and monitoring your progress to it, and making sure that you're using your imagination, your attention control skills, and your work habits in order to keep moving towards it.
Jennifer, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go now to Andy with us in Jefferson. Andy, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Two quick things. One thing I do to avoid eating too many chocolates, I'll go grab them, then go sit down, eat them. That way I'm too lazy to get up and go after them again. But the other one was, this study was done in the late 60s, and I was just wondering, with the society that seems to want this instant gratification right away, how do you think the study, if you did it now, how would that study differ than when it was done in the 60s?
Well, it's not actually if we did it. We are doing those studies. My book deals not simply with the experiments in the 1960s. It starts with that, and then it goes, of course, to the 50 years of work that we and many other psychologists and neuroscientists have been doing currently. And what we're finding, of course, is that there are more temptations than ever in the world, but that there are all kinds of things that are happening also in education and in technology that are allowing people to develop very good self-control skills. So both the temptations are going up and the opportunities to learn the necessary skills for self-control are also going up.
Well, thank you for that call. Let's move next to Rick in Grafton. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how you doing? One of the hardest things I ever did in my life was quit smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And what I ended up was focusing on 2 things at once, a positive and a negative. The positive was what I could buy by saving the money of not smoking, and the number 2, having did research on what smoking does to you, and then witnessing 2 relatives that died as a direct result of smoking. So those 2 things there. But the other question I have is, with ADD or ADHD type diagnostics with people, do you find that they have lower self-control for delayed gratification?
Okay, thank you for your questions, Rick. And this is something that resonates with you, right, Walter? I thought I read that you would also quit smoking.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what Rick was saying describes very, very closely what I myself did when I was a 3-pack-a-day smoker. And this was 50 years ago. And I did exactly what he's talking about, which is to particularly, in my case, focus on the delayed consequences by keeping an image in my mind of what I saw at the medical school at Stanford University, where I was working at the time, when I saw a man being wheeled on a gurney, his chest bare, his head shaved with little green X marks all over it. And I asked the nurse, what's going on here? And she said, well, this man has metastasized lung cancer, and the little green marks is where the radiation goes. So when I quit smoking, I kept that image vividly in my head every time that I was tempted to approach a cigarette. And at the same time, I made smoking cigarettes quite disgusting for myself by inhaling deeply from a tobacco can so that the nicotine was so intense it became unpleasant. Not unlike the strategies that Rick was talking about.
Rick, thanks a lot for the call. We go now to Jackie with us in Oshkosh. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment about the self-control. My granddaughter goes to first grade up here, and her teacher did a wonderful experiment last week. She turned on the bubble machine, and all the kids are up jumping around. You know, a bunch of 6-year-olds. They're popping bubbles and everything. Then she turned it off, and she told the kids to have a seat and to try and sit as long as they possibly could without popping a bubble. She turned on that bubble machine, and it was interesting to see the different control some of the kids have and some don't have.
Very interesting. What do you think of that? Have there been experiments like that, Walter, a bubble machine type test?
I'm not aware of any bubble machine experiments, but it doesn't sound at all uninteresting.
Well, Walter, whether we're talking about bubble machines or marshmallow tests, say you've got a kid who demonstrates not much self-control, you want them to have those benefits later in life. What can a parent, a teacher, do for a kid who doesn't show much self-control?
Well, I mean, the first thing that parents can do is, of course, is to model it in their own behavior. There are many times when there are parents who, for example, don't keep their promises. If that's the case, there's every reason for that child not to be eager to delay gratification for outcomes that he or she doesn't expect to get because the promises haven't been kept. So the way we as parents model self-control in our own lives and exhibit it in front of our children has a huge influence of what our children learn and become. The second thing is that in order for anybody to want to delay gratification, there has to be a motivation to do so. So asking yourself what are the goals that your child might be interested in self-controlling for is sort of a first step in identifying where you need to put your attention.
And those are children. What about adults? Same thing?
Very, very much so, in the sense that if there are self-controlled areas in which you want to change, for example, we've heard smoking examples, we've heard overeating examples, then the next step is, if the motivation is serious, is to specify what's called an if-then plan, so that if I'm about to reach for the cookies, then I, you know, go for the banana instead. So unless there are specific strategies of that kind, for example, through plans in which there is a connection made between the temptation and the response that you're going to make that will avoid the temptation, you don't have a chance. So there are a variety of strategies from planning to self-distancing to changing the meaning of the temptation by how you think about it that are described in my book. And while that can't be told in the couple of minutes that we have, the book is full of such illustrations.
Well, Walter, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was psychologist Walter Michel. He's a professor in the Department of Psychology at Columbia University and the author of the new book, The Marshmallow Test, Mastering Self-Control.
Veronica, should I try this with my daily cookie?
No, because you always share your cookie with me.
All right. So I have reinforcement there to keep getting it.